The Ring and the Book by Robert Browning. Book 2, Part 3. The Canon Caponsacchi, then, was sent to change his garb, retrim his tonsure, tie the clerkly silk round, every plait correct, make the impressive entry on his place of relegation, thrill his civita, as Ovid, a like sufferer in the cause, planted a primrose patch by Pontus, where, what with much culture of the sonnet stave, and converse with the aborigines, soft savagery of eyes unused to roll, and hearts that all awry went pit-a-pat and wanted setting right in charity. What were a couple of years to while away? Pompilia, as enjoined, betook herself to the aforesaid convertites, the sisterhood in Via Lungara, where the light ones live. Spin, pray, then sing like linnets o'er the flax. "Anywhere, anyhow, out of my husband's house is heaven!" cried she. Was therefore suited so. But for Count Guido Franceschini, he, the injured man thus righted, found no heaven in the house when he returned there, I engage, was welcomed by the city turned upside down in a chorus of inquiry. "What, back? You? And no wife?" Left her with the penitents. Ah, being young and pretty, 'twere a shame to have her whipped in public. Leave the job to the priests who understand. Such priests as yours. Pontifex Maximus whipped Vestals once. Our madcap Caponsacchi. Think of him. So he fired up, showed fight and skill of fence. Hey, you drew also, but you did not fight. The wiser. 'Tis a word and a blow with him, true Caponsacchi, of old head in the sack, that fought at Fiesole ere Florence was. He had done enough to firk you were too much. And did the little lady menace you, make at your breast with your own harmless sword? Ah, the spitfire! Well, thank God you're safe and sound. Have kept the sixth commandment, whether or no the lady broke the seventh. I only wish I were as saint-like, could contain me so. I am a sinner. I fear I should have left Sir Priest no nose-tip to turn up at me. You, sir, who listen but interpose no word, ask yourself, had you borne a baiting thus? Was it enough to make a wise man mad? Oh, but I'll have your verdict at the end. Well, not enough, it seems. Such mere hurt falls, frets a while, and aches long, then less and less, and so is done with. Such was not the scheme of the pleasant Comparini. On Guido's wound, ever in due succession, drop by drop, came slow distillment from the alembic here, set on to simmer by Canadian hate, corrosives keeping the man's misery raw. First fire drop. When he thought to make the best of the bad, to wring from out the sentence passed, poor, pitiful, absurd, though it were, yet what might eke him out result enough, and make it worth his while, he had the right and not the wrong in the matter judged at Rome. Inadequate her punishment, no less punished in some slight sort his wife had been. Then, punished for adultery, what else? On such admitted crime he thought to seize and institute procedure in the courts which cut corruption of this kind from man. Cast loose a wife proved loose and cast away. He claimed in due form a divorce at least. This claim was met now by a counterclaim. Pompilia sought divorce from bed and board of Guido, whose outrageous cruelty, whose mother's malice and whose brother's hate were just the white of the charge. Such dreadful depths blackened its centre. Hints of worse than hate. Love from that brother, by that Guido's guile, that mother's prompting. Such reply was made. So was the engine loaded, wound up, sprung on Guido, who received the bolt in breast. But no less bore up. Giddily, perhaps. He had the Abate Paolo still in Rome, brother and friend and fighter on his side. They rallied in a measure, met the foe manlike, joined battle in the public courts, as if to shame supine law from her sloth, and, waiting her award, let beat the while Arezzo's banter, Rome's buffoonery on this ear and on that ear, deaf alike, safe from worse outrage. Let a scorpion nip, and never mind till he contorts his tail. But there was sting in the creature. Thus it struck. Guido had thought in his simplicity, that lying declaration of remorse, that story of the child which was no child, and motherhood no motherhood at all, that even this sin might have its sort of good, inasmuch as no question could be more, call it false, call the story true, no claim of further parentage pretended now. The parents had abjured all right, at least, in the woman still his wife. To plead right now were to declare the abjuration false. He was relieved from any fear henceforth their hands might touch, their breath defile again Pompilia, with his name upon her yet. Well, no. The next news was Pompilia's health demanded change after full 3 long weeks spent in devotion with the sisterhood. Rendering sojourn, so the court opined, too irksome, since the convent's walls were high and windows narrow, nor was air enough nor light enough, but all looked prison-like, the last thing which had come in the court's head. Propose a new expedient, therefore. This she had demanded, had obtained indeed, by intervention of whatever friends or perhaps lovers, beauty in distress, in one whose tale is the town talk beside, never lacks friendship's arm about her neck. Not freedom, scarce remitted penalty, solely the transfer to some private place where better air, more light, new food might be. Incarcerated, call it all the same, at some sure friend's house she must keep inside, be found in at requirement fast enough, Domus pro carcere, in Roman style. You keep the house in the main, as most men do, and all good women, but free otherwise, should friends arrive, to lodge and entertain. And such a domum, such a dwelling place, having all Rome to choose from, where chose she? What house obtained Pompilia's preference? Why, just the Comparini's. Just, do you mark, theirs who renounced all part and lot in her, so long as Guido could be robbed thereby, and only fell back on relationship, and found their daughter safe and sound again, so soon as that might stab him. Yes, the pair who, as I told you, first had baited hook with this poor gilded fly Pompilia thing, then caught the fish, pulled Guido to the shore and gutted him, now found a further use for the bait, would trail the gauze wings yet again in the way of what new swimmer passed their stand. They took Pompilia to their hiding-place, not in the heart of Rome, as formerly, under observance subject to control, but out of the way, or in the way, who knows? That blind mute villa lurking by the gate at Via Paulina, not so hard to miss by the honest eye, easy enough to find in twilight by marauders, where, perchance, some muffled Caponsacchi might repair, employ odd moments when he too tried change, found that a friend's abode was pleasanter than relegation, penance, and the rest. Come, here's the last drop does its worst to wound. Here's Guido poisoned to the bone, you say. Your boasted still's full strain and strength. Not so. One master squeeze from screw shall bring to birth the hoard of the heart of the toad, hell's quintessence. He had learned the true convenience of the change, and why a convent wants the cheerful hearts and helpful hands which female straits require. when in the blind mute villa by the gate, Pompilia, what, sang, danced, saw company? Gave birth, sir, to a child, his son and heir, or Guido's heir and Caponsacchi's son. I want your word now. What do you say to this? What would little Arezzo and great Rome, and what did God say and the devil say, one at each ear of the man, the husband, now the father? Why, the overburdened mind broke down. What was a brain became a blaze in fury of the moment. That first news fell on the count among his vines, it seems, doing his farm work. Why, he summoned steward, called in the first four hard hands and stout hearts from field and furrow, poured out his appeal, not to Rome's law and gospel any more, but this clown with a mother or a wife, that clodpole with a sister or a son. And whereas law and gospel held their peace, what wonder if the sticks and stones cried out? All five soon somehow found themselves at Rome, at the villa door. There was the warmth and light, the sense of life just an inch inside. Some angel must have whispered, "One more chance." He gave it, bade the others stand aside, knocked at the door. "Who is it knocks?" cried one. "I will make," Shirley Guido's angel said, "one final essay, last experiment. Speak the word, name the name from out all names, which if, as doubtless strong illusions are, and strange disguising whence even truth seems false, and, for I am a man, I dare not do God's work until assured I see with God. If I should bring my lips to breathe that name, and they be innocent, nay, by one touch of innocence redeemed from utter guilt, that name will bar the door and bid fate pass. I will not say it is a messenger, a neighbor, even a belated man, much less your husband's friend, your husband's self. At such appeal the door is bound to ope. But I will say, here's rhetoric and despair. Why, sir, the stumbling block is cursed and kicked, block though it be. The name that brought offence will bring offence. The burnt child dreads the fire, although that fire feed on a taper wick which never left the altar nor singed fly. And had a harmless man tripped you by chance, how would you wait him, stand or step aside when next you heard he rolled your way? Enough. Giuseppe Caponsacchi, Guido cried, and open flew the door. Enough again. Vengeance, you know, burst like a mountain wave that holds a monster in it over the house, and wiped its filthy four walls free again with a wash of hellfire. Father, mother, wife, killed them all, bathed his name clean in their blood, and reeking so, was caught, his friends and he, haled hither and imprisoned yesternight, or the day this all was. Now the whole is known, and how the old couple come to lie in state, though hacked to pieces. Never, the experts say, so thorough a study of stabbing. While the wife, viper-like, very difficult to slay, writhes still through every ring of her, poor wretch, at the hospital hard by. Survives, we'll hope, to somewhat purify her putrid soul by full confession, make so much amends while time lasts. Since a day's end, die she must. For Caponsacchi? Why, they'll have him here, the hero of the adventure. Who so fit to tell it in the coming carnival? 'Twill make the fortune of whate'er saloon hears him recount, with helpful cheek and eye hotly indignant now dewy-dimmed. The incidents of flight, pursuit, surprise, capture, with hints of kisses all between. While Guido, the most unromantic spouse, no longer fit to laugh at, since the blood gave the broad farce an all too brutal air. Why, he and those luckless friends of his may tumble in the straw this bitter day, laid by the heels in the new prison, I hear, to bide their trial, since trial, and for the life, follows, if but for form's sake. Yes, indeed. But with a certain issue, no dispute. Try him, bids law. Formalities oblige. But as to the issue, look me in the face. If the law thinks to find them guilty, sir, master or men, touch one hair of the five. Then I say in the name of all that's left of honor in Rome, civility in the world, whereof Rome boasts herself the central source, there's an end to all hope of justice more. Astrea's gone indeed. Let hope go too. Who is it dares impugn the natural law? Deny God's word the faithless wife shall die? What, are we blind? How can we fail to see this crowd of miseries make the man a mark, accumulate on one devoted head for our example, yours and mine who read its lesson thus? Henceforward let none dare stand like a natural in the public way, letting the very urchins twitch his beard and tweak his nose to earn a nickname so of the male Grisel or the modern Job. Had Guido, in the twinkling of an eye, summed up the reckoning, promptly paid himself, that morning when he came up with the pair at the wayside inn, exacted his just debt by aid of what first mattock, pitchfork, axe came to hand in the helpful stable-yard, and with that axe, if Providence so pleased, cloven each head by some Rolando stroke, in one clean cut from crown to clavicle, slain the priest gallant, the wife paramour, sticking, for all defence, in each skull's cleft the rhyme and reason of the stroke thus dealt, to wit, those letters and last evidence of shame, each package in its proper place, bidding, who pitied, undistend the skulls. I say the world had praised the man. But no! That were too plain, too straight, too simply just. He hesitates, calls law, forsooth, to help. And law, distasteful to who calls in law, when honor is beforehand and would serve. What wonder if law hesitate in turn? Plead her disuse to calls of the kind, replies, smiling a little. 'Tis yourself assess the worth of what's lost, some of damage done. What you touched with so light a fingertip, you whose concern it was to grasp the thing, why must law gird herself and grapple with? Law, alien to the actor whose warm blood asks heat from law, whose veins run lukewarm milk. What you dealt lightly with, shall law make out heinous forsooth? Sir, what's the good of law in a case of the kind? None, as she all but says. Call in law when a neighbor breaks your fence, cribs from your field, tampers with rent or lease, touches the purse or pocket. But woos your wife? No. Take the old way, trod when men were men. Guido preferred the new path. For his pains, stuck in a quagmire, floundered worse and worse until he somehow managed to scramble back into the safe, sure, rutted road once more, revenged his own wrong like a gentleman. Once back mid the familiar prince, no doubt he made too rash amends for his first fault, vaulted too loftily over what barred him late, and lit in the mire again. The common chance, the natural over-energy. The deed maladroit yields three deaths instead of one, and one life left. For where's the cannon's corpse? All which is the worse for Guido, but be frank, the better for you and me and all the world. husbands of wives, especially in Rome. The thing is put right in the old place. Hey, the rod hangs on its nail behind the door, fresh from the brine. A matter I commend to the notice, during carnival that's near, of a certain what's-his-name and jackanapes, somewhat too civil of eves, with lute and song, about a house here where I keep a wife. You, being his cousin, may go tell him so. End of Book 2 of The Ring and the Book.